This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Welsh songwriter, singer, and musician John Cale moved from the world of the classical avant-garde to rock. In 1965, he teamed up with Lou Reed to co-found one of the most influential bands in rock history, the Velvet Underground. Lou Reed wrote and sang most of the band's songs. Cale played viola and piano. The group had a dark, streetwise vision that bands today still emulate. Cale left the Velvets in 1968 and since then has been writing and singing his own songs. A new CD retrospective called Seducing Down the Door collects many of Cale's post-Velvets recordings. Cale reunited with Reed in the late 80s to write and perform a series of songs about Andy Warhol called Songs for Drella. This song, Faces and Names, is from that collaboration and is featured on Cale's new CD.
Faces and names, I wish they'd go away. I'd disappear into that wall and never talk. Talk, not talk. I wish I was a robot or a machine, without a feeling or a thought. People who want to meet the name I have are always disappointed in me.
You were born in 1942. Did the beginning of rock and roll have an impact on you?
Yeah, well, a lot of it was via the radio. Mm-hmm. And I used to listen to Willis Conover and Voice of America and Alan Freed on Radio Luxembourg. So Alan Freed was the one that really, everything sort of burst wide open when you had, I mean, in England it was skiffle, but when Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis happened, I mean, it was all over the radio there.
Did you ever imagine yourself playing music like that?
No, not at all. It was far away. But then, you know, it was a kind of a neglected side. It wasn't something I found easy to do, was to start a band there. I tried to start a jazz band, but didn't get very far. And that sort of lay dormant for all the years I was in college in London.
Your father was a coal miner. Did you ever think that's what you'd end up doing?
Well, that was one of the things that they made very sure that I never got involved with. I mean, they thought it was important for me to go down and experience what it was like to be in the mines, but they really thought that being a doctor and a lawyer was the way to go.
But not being a musician?
Certainly not being a musician, no.
Did that not seem like good, honest, hard work?
That's a funny question. It was the kind of thing that no matter how hard you worked at it, it wasn't something that was going to bring in the bread and butter. And I think it was unrealistic. And art had a role if it meant performing other people's music, but to really come up with your own, then that was really asking for it.
So now you got out of Wales by getting a scholarship to study at Tanglewood in New England?
Yeah, I went to college in London for 3 years, and then from there applied to a number of different places to continue. And I met Aaron Copland in London while he was traveling through. And I'd written a number of pieces by that time and was studying composition with Humphrey Searle and wanted really to hook up with John Cage and work with him. And so I kind of was adamant about going to New York whether or not I got the scholarship. But it was certainly a big help.
What was your experience at Tanglewood like?
The pieces I was interested in having performed to the people that were running Tanglewood were too violent. I mean, they carried a lot of violence with them.
What do you mean the pieces you were interested in were too violent?
Well, there were some pieces that eventually, when I did perform it there, had Mrs. Kosovitsky running out of the room in tears. But the students were prepared for it. I mean, they came with eggs and let me have it. So it was a different approach to composition, and it was more in the performance art side of things rather than in the studious written manuscript form.
Give me a sense of what you were doing on stage when they were throwing the eggs at you. What were you playing?
Well, they waited until I'd finished, but I had an axe and a table on stage, and in the middle of the piece that involved prepared piano, I picked up the axe and sort of split the table. And in the middle of an ostensibly straightforward piece of prepared piano, it's not the thing that they expected. I mean, they expected something to happen, but not quite something as horrifying as they saw.
Why were you doing that?
It was, well, I mean, there were various ways in which you can cut the piano up, and really to get the noise of splintering wood and creaking, breaking wood, like an old galleon that would be breaking up at sea. I mean, you had to work at it a little bit. It wasn't just sheer pummeling.
So you were doing this for the sonic effect?
Partly.
And the other part?
The other part was shock value.
Mm-hmm. And what did you enjoy out of the shock value?
I was expecting to be able to gain a little more time to find my feet and find a direction for myself musically.
My guest is John Cale. His new CD retrospective is called Seducing Down the Door. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is John Cale. He co-founded the Velvet Underground with Lou Reed. When you started playing in the Velvets, how did you find a place for the viola? I mean, this was not a common instrument in rock bands by any means.
Well, from a theoretical point of view, it was really just to create space and make something orchestral. Because we all loved Phil Spector and thought that with the four pieces and the viola doing just the fifths, and the change is that you could create a big space, you know, with just four pieces. And that was the ideal, was to do something big and orchestral like Phil Spector did.
Of course, what you were doing was completely unlike what Phil Spector did.
Yeah,
so you're doing this really kind of avant-garde drone in a lot of the pieces.
Yeah, but it's still, I think it still achieved the space. It wasn't the kind of Wagnerian space that Phil Spector was doing. And he combined R&B rhythms with that Wagnerian style. And we were kind of more, I think Lou was more into the Chuck Berry side of the guitar than into the R&B side of it. So it was a little more rockabilly, for want of a... That's a wrong phrase to really apply to. I don't know what style you'd call what Sterling and Lou were really doing, but whatever came out of it was certainly different, and that was enough for us.
I want to play Heroin, and I'd like you to talk about what you're doing toward the end of this recording and how you decided what you were going to do.
Well, when the last verse came about, the whole thing was supposed to fall apart, and there would be this driving drum pattern, and I would turn and feedback the viola, or take the pickup off and twirl it around like a nightstick, and the feedback would get out of control, and sometimes you just have just sheer noise coming out of it, and then it would end, and it would end quietly. And it was meant to build to that climax anyway.
Let's hear it. This is John Cale with the Velvet Underground.
Heroin, it's my wife and it's my life. Because a maniac to my vein leads to a sinner. When the smack
When the Velvets were doing songs like this, did you relate to this street life and to the strung-out songs? To songs about drugs?
Yeah, I was intrigued by the street sensibility there. And I learned a lot from it because I hung out with Lou for a while and he showed me a lot of different sides of New York street life. But at the same time, one of the things that we got through very early on was this argument about the definition of what is risky, both in literature and in everyday things. And it seemed like we would push each other in that way. But there was a lot of engagement going on the literary side of things that we would discuss and really be enthralled by a lot of different writers and keep reassuring ourselves that we really understood what the priorities were. And that was a very important part of it that went on early and sustained itself for a long time, for about 3-4 years.
I know when you were playing with Lou Reed in the Velvet Underground that there was some friction between the two of you. Could you explain something about what the friction had to do with in terms of the music and the both of you as personalities?
Well, it was basically that there were the band was spending a lot of time on the road, and in contrast to the way the Banana album was recorded, there was very little time spent in thinking and working on the arrangements. We'd become a road band and we would go on stage and we put the backbeat behind everything that we did and that would be it. The Banana album, on the other hand, was the product of a year and a half of fairly sedentary and boring rehearsals, which is kind of what gave us time to come up with the different arrangements that were there, and that was interesting to me. At the same time, in the general context of touring and having publicity and having a record out, we would find people that had opened for us years before suddenly soaring up the charts, and we would be in pretty much the same spot. And this was a source of great debate, which got more and more heated about which direction the band should go in, whether it should go for the pretty songs or whether we should go for the orchestral and the harder ones.
Which side were you on?
Well, I thought there was a way of covering both, but the only way to have done that would have been to stop and calm down a lot and focus a lot more. But I think at that point, if it didn't happen in a split second, it wasn't going to happen. That is, people's attention span was very short. And at the time, it just got to the point where there was no discussion anymore. And also there's a question of management that entered into it that really thought that this was no longer a band, that there was just one artist here. And that sort of hurried things along mightily.
It seems to me that when you went on your own, you had at least two really different sides of yourself musically. One side was a more pop side, and one side was a more avant-garde and also angry, emotional side. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's pop side really is something I can't relate to. I think there was, I liked a melody, but whenever that pop side surfaced, it was never something that seemed to stay around for very long. Mm-hmm. And some of the more thoughtful songs were really better, I mean, in the end, in that they probably included more of my personality than just the melodic side.
John Cale, his new CD retrospective is called Seducing Down the Door.
Well, hey,
This is Fresh Air.